That is it.
But she's also a Christian, to the best of my knowledge. But probably she can keep that quite separate from...
She didn't bring it in.
Yeah, she didn't bring it in at Open Circle either. Yeah.
So the husband just follows around, just making sure that she doesn't do too much damage.
I don't know what his purpose was. I think he was just supporting her.
Well, shall we start?
Okay,
well, welcome to Freethinkers. We have very, very few rules. One is that we promise to spend, how much is it?
80 pesos. A piece.
We'll spend here 80.
Yeah, because they give us this room. Okay. I did check with them, and there is another group after called Los Amigos. And we stay and have drinks and meal here. And they say, well, if you promise to do
at
that.
At the same table, or?
No, we meet outside.
Outside afterwards, so whatever.
And then we often have dinner here.
Sounds good.
It's 2-for-1 drink, so you just spend not more than 80 pesos, so. But other than that, if you're going to leave, we ask that, you know.
Yeah, no problem. Sounds good.
Next month and July, I'm not sure I will be here in July. I'm not sure I'll be here. I will be traveling. So I don't know what we want to do about that. Let me check my dates, but what?
Well, the options are to find a substitute for you or to cancel a meeting, right?
Yeah. Any volunteers?
For July?
I'm
kind of out of ideas after last year.
Okay.
I did everything I had.
All right, well, let me check on my dates.
Okay.
Make sure it's... Because right now I think it'll be June and July, but I'm not sure.
You can take a summer vacation.
Yeah. Okay.
Unless we can recruit someone.
Yeah.
And I don't think we will.
No. But we can ask. Okay. Well. Anything else on the... we've got a mailing list. 80 pesos. Okay. Well, we'll start with today's. I just basically cheated and pulled some information from articles. So this is not any original work by a long shot. I searched for the future of atheism. And there was a lot of positive articles. I think the Huffington Post declared by 2036 everybody in the world will be atheist.
2036.
I don't know, it was some shocking pronouncement.
Well, that's the year that it's anticipated that Christianity will fall into the minority in the United States.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Well, if you project from 1990 forward, it's about 2036 that they go from about 50% to below.
Okay.
So that's when there's a Muslim majority.
No.
No?
It's just a plurality. They'll still be the largest group.
I see. Yeah.
But all the other groups combined will be over 50%.
Okay. Maybe that was the... Anyway, so this was one article. It said, when I was a kid, atheists ruled over large swatches of the world, and mainstream conventional wisdom expected religion to die out. If communism, not then acquainted with history's ash heap, didn't squash faith, then a combination of prosperity and technology would dilute religion into a weak, inconsequential tea. Even theologians saw it this way. The term post-religious age was coined by Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who I promised to look up and never did, but I assumed is a religious person. Now, though, the pendulum has swung the other way, and even diehard non-believers proclaim that the golden age of secularism has passed. But the death of atheism is being exaggerated now as much as the death of God was 40 years ago, at least according to this study. Using statistical models, it predicts that atheist-majority countries will soon dot the globe for the first time in history. Japan, UK, Canada, South Korea, Netherlands, Czech Republic, Estonia, Germany, France, and Uruguay are all places where religion was important just a century ago, but that now report some of the lowest belief rates in the world. These countries feature strong educational and social security systems, low inequality, and are all relatively wealthy. Basically, people are less scared about what might befall them, says Quentin Atkinson, a psychologist at the University of Auckland, New Zealand. But not so fast. Existential security is more fallible than it seems. In a moment, everything can change. A drunk driver can kill a loved one. A tornado can destroy a town. A doctor can issue a terminal diagnosis. As climate change wreaks havoc on the world in coming years, and natural resources potentially grow scarce, then suffering and hardship could fuel religiosity. People want to escape suffering, but if they can't get out of it, they want to find meaning. Nerentzian says, I think Nerentzian was some scientist who published this article. For some reason, religion seems to give meaning to suffering, much more so than any secular ideal or belief that we know of. Now, understanding this requires a delve into the dual process theory. The psychological staple states that we have two very basic forms of thought, System 1, System 2. System 2 evolved relatively recently. It's the voice in our head, the narrator who never seems to shut up, that enables us to plan and think logically. System 1, on the other hand, is intuitive, instinctual, automatic. These capabilities regularly develop in humans, regardless of where they are born. They are survival mechanisms. System 1 bestows us with an innate revulsion of rotting meat, allows us to speak our native language without thinking about it, and gives babies the ability to recognize parents and distinguish between living and non-living objects. It makes us prone to looking for patterns, to better understand the world, and to seek meaning for seemingly random events, like natural disasters or the death of loved ones. In addition to helping us navigate the dangers of the world and find a mate, some scholars think that System 1 also enabled religions to evolve and perpetuate. System 1, for example, makes us instinctually primed to see life forces, a phenomenon called hypersensitive agency detection, everywhere we go, regardless of whether they're there or not. Millennia ago, that tendency probably helped us avoid concealed danger, lions crouched in the grass or venomous snakes concealed in a bush. But it also made us vulnerable to inferring the existence of invisible agents, whether they took the form of a benevolent god watching over us, an unappeased ancestor punishing us with a drought, or a monster lurking in the shadows. Similarly, System 1 encourages us to see things dualistically, meaning we have trouble thinking of the mind and body as a single unit. This tendency emerges quite early. Young children, regardless of their cultural background, are inclined to believe that they have an immortal soul, that their essence or personhood existed somewhere prior to their birth and will continue to exist. This disposition easily assimilates into many existing religions, or with a bit of creativity, lends itself to devising original constructs. For all these reasons, many scholars believe that religion arose as a byproduct of our cognitive disposition. Religions are cultural arrangements that evolve to engage and exploit these natural capacities in humans. Atheists must fight against all that cultural and evolutionary baggage. Human beings naturally want to believe that they are part of something bigger, that life isn't completely futile. Our minds crave purpose and explanation. With education, exposure to science and critical thinking, people might stop trusting their intuitions, but the intuitions are there. On the other hand, the system of choice that many atheists and non-believers look to for understanding the natural world is not an easy cognitive pill to swallow. Science is about correcting System 1 biases, Macaulay says. We must accept that the earth spins, even though we never experience that sensation for ourselves. We must embrace the idea that evolution is utterly indifferent and that there is no ultimate design or purpose to the universe, even though our intuition tells us differently. We also find it difficult to admit that we are wrong, to resist our own biases and to accept that truth as we understand it. And to accept the truth as we understand it, it is ever-changing and new empirical data are gathered and tested, all staples of science. Science is cognitively unnatural. It's difficult. Religion, on the other hand, is mostly something we don't even have to learn because we already know it. There's evidence that religious thought is the path of least resistance. You'd have to fundamentally change something about our humanity to get rid of religion. The biological sticking point probably explains the fact although 20% of Americans are not affiliated with a church, 68% of them still say they believe in God, and 37% describe themselves as spiritual. Even without organized religion, they believe that some greater being or life force guides the world. Similarly, around the world, there are those who explicitly say they don't believe in a God, but they still harbor superstitious tendencies like belief in ghosts, astrology, karma, telepathy, or reincarnation. In Scandinavia, most people say they don't believe in God, but paranormal and superstitious beliefs tend to be higher than you'd think. Additionally, non-believers often lean on what could be interpreted as religious proxies, sports teams, yoga, professional institutions, Mother Nature and more, to guide their values in life. As a testament to this, witchcraft is gaining popularity in the US, and paganism seems to be the fastest growing religion in the UK. Religious experiences for non-believers can also manifest in other more bizarre ways. Anthropologist Ryan Harbeck, also of the Thrive Center for Human Development, found evidence that the World of Warcraft, which is a video game, is assuming spiritual importance for some players in China. World of Warcraft seems to be offering opportunities to develop certain moral traits that regular life in contemporary society doesn't afford. People seem to have this conceptual space for religious thought, which, if it is not filled by religion, bubbles up in surprising ways. What's more, religion promotes group cohesion and cooperation. The threat of an all-powerful God, or gods watching for anyone who steps out of line, likely help to keep order in ancient societies. This is the supernatural punishment hypothesis. If everyone believes that the punishment is real, then that can be functional to groups. And again, insecurity and suffering in the population may play a role here, by helping to encourage religions with stricter moral codes. In a recent analysis of religious belief systems of nearly 600 traditional societies from around the world, scientists found that those places with harsher weather or that are more prone to natural disasters were more likely to develop moralizing gods. Why? Helpful neighbors could mean the difference between life and death. In this context, religion evolved as a valuable public utility. When we see something so pervasive, something that emerges so quickly developmentally and remains persistent across cultures, then it makes sense that the leading explanation is that it served a cooperative function. Finally, there's also some simple mathematics behind religion's knack for prevailing. Across cultures, people who are more religious also tend to have more children than people who are not. There's very strong evidence for this. Even among religious people, the more fundamentalist ones usually have higher fertility rates than more liberal ones. Add to the fact that children typically follow their parents' lead when it comes to whether or not they become religious adults themselves, and a completely secularized world seems ever more unlikely. So, for all these reasons, psychological, neurological, historical, cultural, and logistical, experts guess that religion will probably never go away. Religion, whether it's maintained through fear or love, is highly successful at perpetuating itself. If not, it would no longer be with us. And even if we lose sight of the Christian, Muslim, and Hindu gods and all the rest, superstitions and spiritualism will almost certainly still prevail. More formal religious systems, meanwhile, would likely only be a natural disaster or two away. Even the best secular government can't protect you from everything. As soon as we find ourselves facing an ecological crisis, a global nuclear war, or an impending comet collision, the gods would emerge. Humans need comfort in the face of pain and suffering, and many need to think that there's something more after this life, that they're loved by an invisible being. There'll always be people who believe, and I wouldn't be surprised, as Zuckerman says, whoever he is, if they remain the majority.
Zuckerman, Philip Zuckerman.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sociologist.
Okay. So, raise your spirits up, then knock them down. Huh? So, how did we escape the our evolutionary tethers? How did we come to arrive at this point?
Probably learned critical thinking skills at a young age.
Then why are they so pessimistic that this? would not lead to...
Oh, well, I didn't consider that pessimistic. I'm satisfied with that. I don't need religion to disappear from the world. I just need it to stop controlling governments and invading into my life.
That's a great ideal. But do you think it's possible once people believe that... You know, I much more admire the religious zealot who is trying to save my immortal soul through firm belief that he's doing me a favor.
You like that?
Well, I admire it. I don't like it, but I admire the fact that he is trying to save me from a truly held belief, rather than someone says, "Oh, well, you know, it's none of my business that you're gonna, you know, rot in hell forever."
Okay. Yeah, I don't mind that either. They are trying to help you as they understand it.
And by that, they will influence governments, or they will think it's their role to influence governments. The only sure way to stop that is to stomp it out in the first place.
My experience is American experience, and I know that's not yours. Or did you live in the States?
For a while, yeah.
I assume what you're saying is that all the people here are atheists, which may be true. Well, I thought that's what you said, how did we escape that?
Granger took a few more atheists.
My question is, then, assuming that everybody is, at what point in your life do people start questioning, because as far as I know, almost everybody are indoctrinated into religion early in life. Uh-huh. And that's my question is, at what point do people that eventually become atheists start questioning the existing system?
Well, I've read that it's can happen any time. I think with Hitchens, it happened during his school days. There's a very great book, and I can't remember the author, but he was a proselytizer. He was a gung-ho, right-wing Christian. He was the one who sat next to you on the bus and started engaging in conversations. And he's one of the cohorts. He's one of the new atheists. I can't remember his name. But his turnaround came in his 20s. And I've heard people, of all ages. So I'm not sure it is that...
The cluster's in youth. It seems the cluster in youth.
Yeah.
This doesn't happen to 40 and 60 year olds.
Yes, but I think what I'm saying is there's probably an initiation point.
Not necessarily an initiation, but I think as we get older and go to college, you're suddenly introduced to all kinds of things you never knew before other than what your own family, your own little nucleus had. And I think you start questioning about everything. Not just religion. I think that's when we all went, aha. And then we thought we knew everything. There was that period that everything that you read, you wanted to read more, you thought you've got it. And then life takes over. And I think you take both what you were born into and what you were exposed to, let's say in your 20s, and then suddenly you've got life. And I think you extrapolate what you got from both of those to see what helps you get through the rest. Because it's not all as perfect and simple as you thought it was in your 20s. And then you have to start, that's when you question. And I think that's when you start making your own choices than just accepting what you were taught by that super professor, or the groups that you were in that you just bought totally into. And then I think it evolves. And I think it has to do with what your life experiences are. I think people that don't have a lot of experiences out there, then it's easy to stay into tradition, whatever your tradition was. I think others, either they're dying to know more or they're thrown into it, whether they like it or not. Then they have to start evaluating what works. What does this make sense to me anymore? Does it work for me? And as we get older, I think we go through a lot of different stages.
Why doesn't it work for everyone? Why doesn't it work for everyone? Why are there religious scientists?
Because that's what I'm saying. I think every individual has their own experiences, and they have to take from that and make their own questions and their own decisions from it. I'm not a scientist. There is no way any of the decisions in my life are based on science. I've never been exposed to it, really, you know?
Mm-hmm.
However, the more you read, the more you look at things, the more you question. And then it always comes back to me, you know? Based on what I know, what I've experienced, then I have to take what I'm learning.
I think the key to what you said is you question. And I think there's a lot of people who don't question.
Absolutely.
They just accept whatever they're told, and that's what they believe, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's only when you begin to question that you can possibly become an atheist, because I mean, I think the best generator of atheists is catechism. It was for me, at least.
Yeah,
me
too.
So, because they tell you not to question, and all you got to do is say, well, this doesn't make any sense. How can I not question it?
Right.
But there are a lot of people who don't question it. They say, yeah, well, which way do we go for her? You know?
But you know what? A lot of people don't question because they never had a need to question.
They were told they weren't allowed to.
Well, they were punished for
questioning.
Yeah, but isn't it a natural, maybe it's not a natural function of people to question.
Some it is, some it isn't. I think for some it is and for some it isn't.
But what you're saying is...
It depends on whether your parents wrapped your knuckles.
You're saying somebody didn't get enough oxygen and that they're never going to question anything.
Henry, what do you make of those who question and have good critical skills, thinking skills, are well educated, and retain their religious beliefs?
It's hard to come to terms with that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people like that.
There's a lot of people like that. Yes.
But, you know,
but that's the key question to understand: will religion fade away?
Mm-hmm.
Is looking at those
I guess the question,
who are exactly like you describe, but retain their religious
beliefs.
And
I would ask, why are they religious?
Because it worked for them, and they didn't have to be put, they were never put in a position where they had to question it. As long as things were copacetic, then you go along with tradition.
It's probably social.
They go beyond that. There are physicists who are quite religious, and these are brilliant people, world-class physicists, far more knowledgeable about science than the average person, and it really is quite interesting to look at those lives, because they make some pretty strong defenses of why they retain their religious beliefs.
Well, you know what? It's kind of nice to have that hope and that illusion to something better.
Right.
You know, no matter what everybody answers, and that's fine, and you can accept it.
I think in my cases, it's purely social.
Mostly social.
People,
I think the reason, John, is because even no matter how scientifically versed you are, some people have the feeling that this just can't be enough.
Right.
There has to be something else going on. You know, there's
another way that I look at it is I think it's hardwired into us, most of the population,
mm-hmm.
that they just, because if you go track our ancestors back, there are certain needs that we have that are based on just surviving. And the religion, I think almost if you go back, as far as everything I've seen, to where they had any kind of civilization at all, there is religion.
It's good at organizing people.
And I think it's really passed down through our genes. It's hardwired in.
It's good at controlling people.
Are there any society? Well, let me first extend a welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. I've been here before.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
We're discussing the reasons why atheism is going to take over the world in the next,
or is not,
45 minutes, or yeah, or it isn't.
Or it isn't. Okay. Yeah.
Are you on the mailing list?
I get it from Lucretia.
Okay.
I don't think atheism is trying to take over anything. What's happening is religion is fading away.
But is superstitious belief fading away?
Probably not, no.
Yeah. And can it ever? And is it a problem?
No, that's what I want to say.
Yeah, is it a problem?
I don't really mind. Go ahead and believe in reincarnation.
I think it is a problem.
Why?
Religion?
No, he said superstition.
Well, what superstition?
There are superstitions,
religion,
that you might not consider.
Can you
religious.
Differentiate between the two?
It depends on whether you're. I think whether you're President Reagan's astrologer
is a version of the other.
If you want to call belief in four-leaf clovers as magical religion, I won't quibble with that. I'll give you that.
And Henry brings up a good point. What's the name?
Yeah, it depends on what Nancy Reagan's astrologer says, right?
They went through her. She was in San Francisco. I can't remember. Personal secretary wrote a book, and any major decision they ran past this woman in San Francisco.
I use the phrase faith-based thinking for unlimited.
Yeah.
If you believe something with insufficient support, that's faith-based thinking.
But isn't that in itself? Isn't there an inherent danger in that? I mean, that affects all of us.
Sure.
What's the danger?
Ask the Branch Davidians.
Hmm? What's the danger?
Well, there's Ronald Reagan when he was in the White House.
Oh,
when he was consulting an astrologist in San Francisco over every major policy decision.
Philip, if you'd like an opinion on whether faith can be dangerous, just ask the Branch Davidians. Remember them?
Yeah.
Okay, well, faith killed them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, dangerous to... Well, if people want to believe something that's dangerous to themselves, go ahead. But it's how much does it impact...
They took their children with them.
But if they had... See, that's just it. If they're in power, it affects everybody that's under them.
So. Is anyone watching The Handmaid's Tale?
Well,
man, is that close to potential reality?
Right, the exact same way to pop over here.
Yeah. It's scary, you know.
In the crucible.
Yeah. It's, so
a,
I, I.
It's a book. Oh, it was later made into a movie.
Yeah. It's, I cannot look upon it as benign and, look upon...
Religion.
Yeah.
There's no...
Look
value.
At, well, not religion, just...
But on the other
the
hand...
lack of logical...
On the other hand, I think one's about as dangerous as the other. I mean, you have just as many...
Well, when you say one, you talk about religion and...
And non-believers.
Okay. So one is as dangerous as the other.
I'm not going to call them atheists per se.
Okay, so...
I'm going to call them non-believers.
Okay.
And that they can do just as bad things as the religious.
Isn't that an agnostic?
Mm-hmm.
An agnostic is a non-believer?
Sure. Probably.
It's a question of that.
Yeah, I guess.
But as opposed to an atheist.
I mean, yeah, that's an atheist is like a pure form, right?
Well, that's not the way the language is being used anymore, at least not by unbelievers. I call myself an atheist and an agnostic. Mm-hmm. I call myself an atheist because I don't have a God belief.
Yeah.
I don't believe in God. That doesn't mean I'm saying there is no God. I'm saying I have no reason to believe that. And then if you ask me whether gods exist or not, I have to say I don't know. That makes me an agnostic.
But you can believe in reincarnation, and it's our theory of... how it goes around, but it doesn't have rules and regulations to it.
Nor evidence. It's faith-based thinking.
Exactly.
And that's the phrase I like better than religion. And also,
which religion is that?
It's not even a religion, because I can't say that I'm, any religion.
Faith-based thinking goes beyond religion.
It's got to go around.
Are you a climate denier? If so, that's faith-based thinking. Do you still think this president is guilty of crimes? That's faith.
Well, I mean, the evidence all leans the other way.
Yeah.
If you can't see that and you want to go with this, the unsupported belief, that's faith-based thinking.
Faith-based. Right.
If you find that you believe something with insufficient support, you have a faith-based belief. If you believe you're going to reincarnate, There's no reason to believe that. It might be true, mm-hmm. but there's no reason to believe that. That's a faith based on.
Okay. And a Gnostic then to me is just one that questions and takes everything.
An agnostic?
Right?
Well, you already heard me use the word agnostic. I don't know if you were here when we were talking about the 9/11 conspiracy theories. Yeah. And the word I use on myself to describe myself is I'm agnostic about that.
Because you don't because have I haven't the answers picked, that you can
I don't know.
Into. Right.
And that's all that means.
Right.
When you use the word agnostic, you're answering a question that you're presupposing that God is some sort of default state. Mm-hmm. You know. Well, no one asks you whether you believe in fairies. No one. There's a whole host of things that you may not believe in.
Right.
That there isn't a term for.
Okay.
Yeah? But you come up with agnostic for not knowing whether you believe in God. Or
no,
not knowing
no,
whether
no.
God exists.
No, I'm going to correct that because I don't know any more whether fairies exist any more than I know whether God exists.
So what is
God?
Okay, so you think there's a possibility for absolutely anything to exist? Absolutely anything and everything.
Well, possible simply means not known to be impossible. Anything that's not known to be impossible is by default possible.
Well, that's true, but go on, Henry. Sorry.
I'll
jump in.
So what you're saying is that if you're an atheist, that means actually you're involved in a faith-based system.
No.
Not necessarily. It's how the terms are used.
Wait, if you're an agnostic and you're not quite sure about anything, but once you accept being an atheist, meaning that you don't believe in a God, that is a belief system.
Let me differentiate.
It's a lack of belief.
Let me differentiate two really quite different kinds of atheists. There are atheists who have no belief in anything supernatural. Therefore, they have no belief in a God. There are other atheists who are certain there is no God. They have a positive belief that there is no God. The two are very different. So that is why the term atheist can be so confusing. There can be people like Stephen who do not assert a certainty that there is no God. Him and I would agree on that. But there are atheists who aggressively assert there is no God. It is not possible for there to be a God. Do you see the different use of this? Mm-hmm.
One's
the
a subset of the other, John.
Hmm?
One's a subset of the other.
How do you mean?
Anybody who can answer no to the question, do you believe in a God or gods, is an atheist. Whether you go further and say gods do not exist, or just say, I don't know. You can go down either of those paths. But anybody who gives a no answer to the question, do you believe in a God or gods, by me, is an atheist.
Well, by definition of the word.
An atheist.
But what has happened in society, the way the word is commonly used over recent decades, because of the new atheist movement led by Richard Dawkins and others, in common society, when you say atheist, you think of Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens. That's what's in most people's mind. That is why I prefer to call myself agnostic and not identify with atheist, because if I say that to somebody who doesn't know the nuances, they immediately say, well, they align you with people like Richard Dawkins. Mm-hmm. And
people are working on correcting that thinking.
Hmm?
People are working on correcting that thinking. We're
yes.
doing that right now, right here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. So even with a knowledgeable crowd, it's not nearly as problematic.
But the average person on the street, exactly.
That's why people don't like to use the word atheist, because it's not only asserting that there's no God, but you're also perceived by large numbers of people as being immoral.
Yes.
And immoral and very dangerous.
Yeah.
And witchcrafty.
Right. So people don't like to use the word atheist, but that's also being worked on. People are trying to take that word back.
And that unfortunate word bright that came out.
That came out of England, your country.
I think that was an imitation of gay.
Well, I think to a certain extent then you got to admit that atheists are dangerous.
Atheists are dangerous?
And in that you're challenging the power structure and the standard.
What's
of
the
life.
Danger?
They're dangerous to religion.
Well, not just well, religion and everything that spawned off of religion.
Yeah, they're dangerous to the status quo theism.
And I think you're only two steps away from people being burned at the stake.
From atheists.
Yeah,
atheist. No. Atheist. Mean? That's what I'm talking about. That's
no, atheist being burned at the stake.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's more like it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. How did you misinterpret?
I thought you were saying atheism is dangerous, and we're two steps away from burning people at the stake.
Well, I'm just saying that atheists can be just as dangerous.
Oh, sure.
There are other religious murders
come in all religions.
But on the other hand, most religions have a very good track record of being dangerous.
Yes. Right. There's no correlation between morality and religious.
I just want to say this about the word religion.
Brothership.
Because I've been spending a lot of time, as most people know me, know, on these religious forums. Uh-huh. And the one that I got involved with about a year ago, I've been exposed to a lot of Eastern religion, these Dharmic religions.
Okay.
They are completely different. When I talk about religion, I'm talking about Christianity, Judaism, and Islam.
Yeah.
Not these people. These people seem harmless to me.
It's a philosophy more than a religion.
Right. Yeah. So that's all these words are problematic.
Yeah.
Religion really isn't a problem. Certain kinds of religions are a problem.
You're right.
Only when they become political and organized.
Yes. Yes. And the United States, unfortunately, has a particular problem. I'm Canadian, so it has taken some time to appreciate the special situation in the States, where you have fundamentalist Christians who are politically active. That's a big problem.
And it's becoming strong.
They want to take over the government. A very different example is Canada. Canada had a fundamentalist Christian as prime minister for 10 years. And didn't make a big difference.
Which one?
Stephen Harper.
Okay.
He was not my favorite prime minister by a long shot, because he's a conservative, but his religion did not really harm Canada very much, and the group behind him are like your fundamentalist Christians in the United States, but because the Canadian culture is so different, and because they are not an organized political power, they really didn't fundamentally change Canadian society. So Canada survived quite nicely. It was a sigh of relief when he left office, but the country actually survived 10 years under a fundamentalist Christian prime minister.
You know, I think it is in question, because the founding fathers of the United States were at least vocally all highly religious. However, they had the intelligence to slip in into the Constitution that the two things would be separate, government and religion.
I can give you
although that's been chipped at quite a bit.
A British perspective, because this is where,
What from, what's his name? Tokenoi?
Who?
That what's happening in Britain right now?
Oh, is that, what are you talking about right now?
No, I'm just saying that in Britain, the religion is part of the government.
Officially.
The Queen is the head of the church. It's her,
right.
It's her government, Her Majesty's government. And in schools, it is the law you have to be taught. When I was at school, you had to be taught Christianity. Religious instruction in every school. It becomes a bureaucratic leg of the government. It's like the Ministry of Defence. We have the Ministry of Religion, and
really?
they are looked upon with the same bureaucratic disdain, and so religion just looked like an offshoot of the government rather than a.
So, how do they feel about atheists in England?
Well, by default, if you go into hospital, this used to be the case. I think it's changed a lot, but you used to be C of E, Church of England, by default, and you had to specifically state you were Methodist, Catholic, atheist, whatever. So everyone was Christian by default on any form, and then you had to specifically state you were not. But attendance at church was practically zero. In fact, when I last went over there, I went over with my wife, and she said, "Oh, these restaurants we've been going in, they look awfully like churches." And they've been selling them off to become pubs, discos, restaurants. Attendance is just plummeted. However, at the same time, there has been an uprising in the charismatics, the right-wing Christian revival movement. And that has been growing, you know. You'll see people now with their hands in there at these meetings, but they're not in churches. The churches were basically government buildings.
Now, I think back to that question about atheists and believers, that it's always going to be, there's always going to be probably about the same percentage that you have. And I don't know what that percentage is. Maybe it's 90-10. But there's going to be 90% of the people that are going to have some kind of a belief system. And just like no matter what society you run in, there's going to be X number of rich people, percentage-wise. And there are going to be X number of really poor and X number of people somewhere in between.
I don't know if anyone's seen any statistics about the paranormal belief, how that is changing versus atheism versus all the other non-evidence-based thinking, whether it's staying stable, and within that percentage, organized religion is falling, and the Wiccans and the, you know, whatever.
Well, I know numbers.
Is it just moving around?
I know numbers for the United States. Self-identification surveys have been going on since 1990.
Okay.
There was an error study in 1990. It was called American Religious Identification Survey. And at that time, about 90% of Americans called themselves Christians. It's now down to closer to 70%. It's falling.
But as though 20%, do they still believe in superstition?
Well, the nuns are...
New Ageism?
The nuns are a grab bag. They're atheists, they're Wiccans, they're pagans, they're just anybody that doesn't identify with Christianity.
Yeah.
So some of them are very superstitious. But once again, I said, my interest in this is not what
it's,
they
yeah,
believe.
It's the organized
it's the political.
Religion, yes.
As long as
yeah.
they're not voting
yes.
for against yeah. abortion and against same-sex marriage, it's that block that I concern myself with.
Yes.
A question I would like to ask, think of your favorite atheist. Is it possible for any human being, particularly any atheist, to be completely free of all unjustified beliefs?
That's a good question. You said, is it really innate in all of us, even the most dedicated atheists?
Do we still harbor some
little seed?
Do you, Phil, have any unjustified beliefs?
I mean, like we're all bigots.
Well, no, I'm not talking about...
No, what I'm saying is that almost everybody, and I would say everybody, is bigoted. At the same time, what you're saying is that almost everybody has some form of residual...
Are you using bigoted and biased as synonyms?
Say what? Yeah,
are you using bigoted and biased as synonyms? Are those words the same to you? Are you saying that we're all biased in some way? Because I don't think we're all bigoted. But I would say we are all biased.
Well,
bigotry and bias are not.
Yeah, but
they're not the same thing.
Are they separate?
That's quite a difference.
I am agreeing, and I'm just trying to make sure. I forgot your name.
No, I do believe. I do believe you're probably bigoted in some way or another.
I'm sorry.
I believe you're not just biased. Well, you can call it bias. I don't know. You're putting an awful fine line on that.
No, bigotry and bias are a huge difference.
Jack, for one thing, bigotry is always directed against people. Biases can be directed against anything.
Against the color blue, you can be biased against blue.
But I was talking about the human level, not whether you're biased to drive on a flat road versus a curvy road, that kind of thing.
Well, that's biased too. If I like this restaurant better than that one,
no,
that's
I'm saying
too.
Is what I'm saying. I was talking about the human experience of other people.
Okay, well, I think that's innate to all of us, xenophobia. And I have some feelings in that area that I have to tame.
I'm trying to connect it up with religion. That he said that there's always some small amount.
I think John's question was more of, you know, the atheist in the foxhole.
Right. How about...
When we question our existence... Is there something that says, well, maybe when I die, maybe that,
Not a chance. Is that not the question?
No. Okay.
Do you remember when the Hawaiians thought they were going to be nuked?
Big one?
When the Hawaiians thought they were going to be nuked? How many of them became Christians then, in that hour? Or became, how many atheists became religious in that hour? Like none.
That's the question. I mean, we go through all different stages, but maybe it comes down to just before death, you know, and what do people cling to or not cling to, give up to, you know, when it really comes down at the end of the line, you know, and how many people call in a priest when they've never gone to church for the last 60 years, just in case, or the other person who says...
Let's hope they call him the right religious priest, though. What if they pick the wrong one?
They better get the right one.
And they lose so
they're right there. Or the other person that just says, you know, I've lived my life, it is what it is.
No, there's... That's still not what I'm trying to get at. There are atheists who face end-of-life issues and don't change one iota. And there are atheists who face end-of-life issues and change dramatically. So you get all kinds of patterns. I'm asking that without those traumatic events, just facing the possibility, theoretically, of anybody, is it possible to get rid of absolutely every unjustified belief and build a worldview on a foundation that is based on good logic, good science? Is that even theoretically possible?
Yeah. No. It is desirable.
Yeah, very desirable.
But whether it can be achieved or not, yes, is a question.
The only hard part is identifying your unsupported beliefs.
Right, that's really tough.
But if your feeling is that I should hold no unsupported beliefs, if I ever find another one, I'm going to re-examine it. And I'm either going to find support for it or reject it or tweak it or something. There may be some harbored in there from before I develop critical thinking. But I spent the last couple of decades trying to identify those ideas.
it's a goal.
And how are you doing, though?
I'm not aware of any more.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean there isn't one or two in there. But I don't know why I wouldn't know if there was.
Yeah, but if you keep searching, you're going to find something else you've got to re-examine, right?
I want to pursue this. Can I pursue this with Stephen?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm doing this not argumentatively. I'm really intrigued because I've tried to go down that path, and I hit a wall. And I hit a wall trying to identify what are the fundamental questions and what are the right answers to those questions. And I come back to, and I increasingly become more committed to pluralism. In other words, for example, the question, does God exist? I see a number of possible answers to that question, and a number of other, what is fundamental reality? Trying to identify what are fundamental questions, there's no consensus on what the right questions are, and there is no consensus on the answers to those questions. So I have found it rather easy to identify unjustified beliefs. My problem is there's too many unjustified beliefs, and how do you avoid not simply picking one?
It's easy for me. I don't know why it's so easy.
Well, that's why I'm intrigued.
So agnosticism everywhere. Like, I get into this discussion of materialism versus idealism versus dualism.
Yes.
They go, are you a materialist? No, I'm agnostic. There's no way to choose between these things. Why is this so hard? Why do we just have to pick one when we have no way to do that? If you're going to go down that road, then you will have unsupported beliefs.
But isn't it often the question that is really the question that cannot be answered? You can either say, well, I'm agnostic about it because I can never know, or it's a question that really should never be asked because it can't have an answer.
So many people are searching. I don't understand that either. I've examined these issues. Some of the questions just seem unanswerable to me, and I don't expect to find answers. I'm not searching for answers anymore.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if one falls into my lap, I'll consider it. But these are the same questions John's talking about. I've also considered since my 30s, and I'm just not expecting any more answers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think if you believe in the Big Bang Theory without any intelligent help, and you believe in evolution, that pretty much answers everything. Because what it really says is that through the forces of nature, somehow life was created, and basically, you're going to die. And that's all there is. There aren't any big questions.
Why are we here?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Why are we here?
There is no reason. Because if you take certain elements of life and juggle them around, sooner or later you're going to come up with a walking, talking ape.
Mm-hmm.
Or some version of that. And what I'm saying is, if you believe in those two things, there aren't any other questions.
So what was before the Big Bang?
I don't have to answer that, do
you
I?
You don't. But
I mean, no. I'm saying that's question. Not a big question.
It's not a big question to you.
Well, I'm saying...
But you cannot objectively prove it is not a big question. You can only assert that it is not a big question for you. It's a big question for many people.
You don't have to prove
everything. But the answer could be, we don't know yet.
That is the answer.
I think they've demonstrated that the Big Bang could happen in a number of different ways. Okay? Numerous different ways are way above my pay grade and probably yours. So, what I'm saying is, why ask those questions?
Well,
there are questions.
Because we...
But my point is that there can be no objective answer to whether the question is meaningful or not. That may be satisfying to you.
But you're looking for something.
I'm looking to answer questions.
But I'm saying...
And I quite respect somebody who says, no, those questions are meaningless. But I find that an empty claim. To me, that is only claiming they're meaningless for you.
No, they're not meaningless. They're just not answerable.
Well, they're not currently answerable. That doesn't mean they're always going to be unanswerable. I don't think there are any always unanswerable questions. Unless you've mixed it up.
But some of the atheist thinkers are moving in the direction, they're not a majority, but they are moving in the direction that the questions long term are going to remain unanswerable.
Well, actually, that's quite true. It is possible to have unanswerable questions, especially in mathematics. So I'll take that back.
Yeah.
There are definitely questions that are unanswerable.
So then, how do you deal with building a solid foundation?
The way the mathematics does it is very simple. You pick A or B. You either say this is true or this is not true, and you consider whatever the implications are.
Yeah.
But you can absolutely prove that there are things that are true or not true,
mm-hmm.
given this set of axioms that you can or cannot, that will not be provable.
Yes.
So you can do the same thing in whatever philosophy you want. You can say X works or X doesn't work, mm-hmm. and continue from there. It's up to you.
I would agree with that, yes.
Okay.
So you were asking a little while ago about unsupported beliefs, and you were going to challenge me for unsupported beliefs, and I think we got lost on that. I say I don't have any,
mm-hmm.
or if I do, I can't find them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know, because I can't look into your mind.
Well, we've spent hours speaking with each other.
But, yeah.
Have you heard any unsupported beliefs?
Huh?
Have you heard any unsupported beliefs?
I can only observe your actions and hear your words.
Have you heard any unsupported beliefs?
No.
Okay. I don't know whether there's any there either or not, but what I'm saying is, like many other people, I spent a long time trying to identify them and rectify them, because plenty got in before critical thinking developed. Well, that's what happens.
Sure.
You don't have a filter. You don't have a way to evaluate ideas. You believe whatever your teacher or your mother told you, and your head is just filled with ideas that can't be supported. Mm-hmm. And then you get a little older, and you learn to think a different way, and you have to go back and rework all that. Otherwise, your head is full of them. But I can't identify any. And I think the secret is to recognize what questions can be answered and what can't, and just stop trying to find answers that can't be found, and don't guess.
So your agnosticism is not so much an answer as a placeholder for something that can't be answered.
The word agnosticism to me means I've reached the end of the road. I can't go further. Oh. I'm left with two or more options, and I can't eliminate either. I can't rule either in or out. They have to both remain possible.
You cannot pick or choose.
Right.
And I think the difference between you and me, and I'm not putting this in terms of right or wrong, I remain fascinated by those questions. I find them extremely interesting and wrestle with them. And to me, that is part of the enjoyment of my life.
I'm glad. And I, you know what, I was there once too, and I hope this doesn't sound...
Go ahead.
Well, but it stopped.
Like, yes.
Like I said, I spent time on these message boards, and these people are always searching all their life. They're always searching. I stopped searching a long time ago. Now, they don't like to hear that phrase, because that sounds like I'm closing my mind. No, it just means that I don't expect to find any more answers. I think I've found the ones I'm going to find.
But I would use different words talking about myself, because, in a way I'm searching, but I wouldn't describe it that way. By continuing to pursue answers to the questions, I continue learning. And that to me is thrilling. That to me is satisfying. So looking at these difficult, unanswerable questions... the origin of the universe is a fascinating one. We're not answering the question, but we're getting better and better and better, and that better and better is very interesting. So I remain intrigued by it, rather than I feel drawn to it, and I don't feel like I'm searching in the sense that there is some void that needs to be filled. I'm searching because by searching, I continue to learn, and I find that stimulating.
Okay.
That's just a difference.
Yeah.
We're trapped in certain ways that we're trapped by our language. You know, we're limited, should I say. We're limited by what we can explain.
Yes.
Or think.
I think, yeah.
Yes.
And we're also, you know, our perception of reality is really those senses that have evolved for our survival.
Yeah, not for rational thought.
Well, but it's, again, it's this thing, I have no idea what I don't know, but how important is it that I...
don't know.
that I know it. You know, there could be a whole realm of things that I cannot perceive.
And so what?
And exactly. And so what, yeah.
Exactly.
I
mean,
you know, I'm not... I entertain the idea, and I think, what's the point? How useful is it?
That's what I feel about gods. If gods exist, they're either unable to communicate with us or unwilling to.
Yeah.
And so my answer is, so what?
So
who cares if such things exist? Whichever is the
Until it comes into our realm and actually touches me.
There are people who do believe that God communicates just with them.
Yeah.
How fortunate they are.
And I admire that in people that are able to get that strength. And I can't find it.
Do you feel like you're lacking?
No.
Yeah, me either. I don't get that, and I'm perfectly fine without it.
And I'm fine as
because
well.
Because I grew up without it.
But I do admire the people who get whatever they get, strength or whatever they get from
their belief.
That those are also called delusions.
But I admire those people who are either delusional or get a religious benefit from God in their times of need. It's a strength that I have nothing to, I can't do that.
That's what he was talking about earlier, and actually, I think it makes life very nice if you can believe in a God. It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, but I can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So nothing is easy.
I can't see any advantage to myself to have that belief. I can't see how that would be at all comforting to me. I just don't identify with that at all. I don't have those needs. I don't know what's different.
I don't have those needs as well, but I find it an admirable trait in people who do get a benefit from
Some people do have
the
those
beads
needs.
And that's the whatever.
And maybe that could be one of the differences between the people that believe and the people that don't.
Yeah, but you know what? I'll go a little further. I think religion creates that need. I think religion creates that need. If you grow up without thinking there's a cosmic babysitter judging you and writing down who's naughty and who's nice, you will develop in a different way than if you don't. And if you get to a certain point of your life thinking that way, you're not going to be able to change. It's going to be scary to not have that that guy looking down at you, and it's going to be scary to not imagine an afterlife. But if you start from the beginning without those things, you can grow a different way, and you don't need that.
Yeah. What happened? I mean, I'm sure you've experienced grief in your life.
Yes.
And it's a very tangible thing.
Yes.
And I'm sure that, I'm not sure whether you would admit, that people with religious convictions draw some comfort from those convictions in moments of grief.
You know how I draw comfort in moments like that? I used to be a hospice medical director, so I'm very familiar with death.
Sure.
And what I used to say to people, and I used to tell my wife when our dogs died and stuff like that, what a privilege it is for you to grieve, because something was loved and something
and
something left the world. And you know, most living things are never grieved; their death is never noticed. But this life was, and it is your privilege to suffer.
And I could not will myself to form a belief just for the comfort it provides.
I try to avoid that. That's what I call faith-based thinking.
Yeah, but I think your question was, you know, if you had that belief, mm-hmm. you know.
More power to you.
It is.
But it's not for me.
Yeah.
I'm very skeptical of the more power to you statement because it's very dangerous.
Well,
there's a very thin line between, oh, it's really great for me, but now I want you to have it too.
Oh, no. I don't want to have it,
but the people who do have it, a lot of them think you should have it too.
Well,
some of them.
All the ones in power.
Maybe it is.
Yeah, I think admires they're wrong because. Because if you're comforted by a delusion,
right.
That comfort is real.
Did you say admire's the wrong word?
I think so.
Yes. I've been thinking that all along.
Yeah.
I think what you're saying is I'm not going to look down on them.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I'll go with you on that. I don't despise
them. Okay, admire is the wrong word.
Yeah, I don't admire that.
But say envy, maybe. They have that comfort.
Yeah. Well, that's different.
Have, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid of them to you know.
Well, Henry, my father was an extremely religious man, and you would have had no reason to be afraid of him.
Of course, I'm sure
and
there's lots of people.
There are thousands like that.
There
so,
are thousands,
so,
but there
so.
Are there are a sad few who believe so strongly that what they are told is right that they're willing to impose it on you.
No. And I agree. I share your concern, and I think the United States, unfortunately, has a special problem with too
Absolutely.
Many of those. And in Canada, the Christians who want to impose their will on Canadian society are essentially an insignificant minority, so they don't have the impact.
You're
so,
lucky.
So you, yes. Yes. Many Canadians down here say it's a
it
good
be
time
like
to be Canadian.
Right.
The Jews and Muslims in the States, they may want to impose a pork ban, but they're not getting it.
Right.
They're not organizing.
And if they run on that, they're never going to get elected. which is the same in the UK. Any politician that, you know, professes a strong belief will not get elected. People will be suspicious.
A strong religious belief?
Yeah. They expect them to go to church on Remembrance Day and the sort of rituals, but any sort of firmly held religious belief, people will.
So you're saying they go to church religiously.
One of the best things that Stephen Hawking said was, "I'm not afraid of God, but I am afraid of his followers."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Similar to what Gandhi said.
One thing about you mentioning that they're calling the priest at the last minute. Mm-hmm. If you're a Protestant, there are Protestants who will do this and convert to Catholicism on the deathbed.
Oh my God.
Because they want one less Catholic in the world after they died.
I want to pose another question. I'm genuinely interested what your response would be. We've talked about religion fading. There is another interesting dynamic in the secular community, that is the rise of the spiritual but not religious, including the atheists who are aligning with the spiritual but not religious.
Can you define that last one? The
atheists who align with the idea of being spiritual but not religious. Sam Harris would describe himself that way. Susan Blackmore, Steven Pinkler, Owen Flanagan. There are a number of very prominent atheists who are actively involved in organizing as atheists, but are joining the spiritual but not religious.
And when you say spiritual, are you talking about paranormal spirits? Are you talking about mental states?
No, these are genuine atheists. They have no belief in the supernatural.
So when you say spirits implies
what the
something
spiritual
ethereal.
Well, yeah. It's a word that has a very wide range of meaning, so you have to understand how they are specifically using it. There's all kinds of nuances, but there surely is no doubt that Sam Harris is an atheist. He's one of the four horsemen of atheism. So he is unquestionably a committed atheist, but he is equally committed to a concept of secular spirituality. You look puzzled. Are you puzzled that?
If you read his book,
maybe it's
meditation.
The wrong word. Because every time you say they're into spiritual matters, I'm going, what are you talking about?
Yeah, what does it mean?
Okay, that answers my question. You don't know what I'm talking about. That's fine. That's not
maybe you're using the wrong word.
No, I'm absolutely not using the wrong word. Susan Blackmore is on the board of directors of the Spiritual Naturalist Society. Owen Flanagan is on the board.
So could you define it for us?
Steven Pinkler is on the board of an organization called Sacred Naturalism. So
But that's some form of religious belief is what the system you're talking about.
They would deny that it is a religious belief.
But they can deny it all day.
You assert that they're wrong?
If they're dealing with spirituality, which, if I'm getting the right sense of what that means, maybe I'm not, but that means that there's some kind of a mysticism?
No.
Yes.
Well,
is it that everybody just that they believe in being happy?
There is a... I probably spoke too quickly about mysticism. There certainly is a sense of awe to mystery, to these unanswerable questions, but coming at it with emotion and celebration and awe.
An atheist can have a spiritual experience. You can look up at the sky and see the Milky Way and just contemplate what you're experiencing and feel mystery, feel awe, feel gratitude, feel connected, and have a shiver go through your heart. That's a spiritual experience, but it's not religious. And it's not supernatural.
Do you disagree, John? With what?
I don't disagree with that.
No, okay. So in that respect, I mean, there's no contradiction.
I'm just looking for reactions. I've got two very different reactions, and I don't mean that as a criticism, but this is coming.
Well, when
as
I look up at the Milky Way, what I'm looking at is an uncountable number of stars, okay? And it's a beautiful sight, but I don't have any spiritual reaction to it.
You might have. How's your science?
Hmm?
How's your science?
Well, that was good enough to get me through school.
Okay. Look at that star and understand that you are made of the ash of those stars.
Oh, I understand all that.
You just want to put it all away?
That doesn't drive me spiritual in some way.
It does me.
Yeah, I mean all.
To me, right. And I guess we're talking different things here. When you start talking all the elements that are derived out of this reaction of stars and that one and they come together, I'm going, okay, that's interesting. That's interesting, and it forms the basis of all of our science. But it's.
Then you're not having a spiritual experience. But I'll bet you do have spiritual experiences with nature. I bet there are times when you feel that shiver.
Well, I just spent 2 weeks on a stream, wading a stream and fishing it because I enjoyed it.
Did you feel connected?
You know, I think that's. If you enjoy it, that's enough, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Okay. Is there any music?
Do I have to be connected
to
that
inner
meaning of that stream?
You don't have to be anything, Jack.
And the crawdads rolling around on the bottom?
No, but some people are. And they are having spiritual experiences.
Well, and see, to me, I call that some kind of a religion.
I don't.
Yeah. And there are a growing number of atheists who are more like Stephen.
Yeah, to me, what
but
it sounds,
I still don't think it's a contradiction.
Yeah, it sounds to me like what they're doing, and you're rolling off these supposedly famous names. I can't believe that they can be leading some kind of a movement and not have the purity of not believing.
Are they?
Well, that's very judgmental, and maybe they're lying. But as I read Susan Blackmore, I find her very convincing and very genuine. And I'm not the least bit suspicious of her.
Is the claim that there's something unexplainable in the spirituality that it cannot be understood, or is that not the claim?
Well, it certainly is the claim of some that the evidence is moving in the direction that big questions. That we could reach a limit of human knowledge and there will forever remain questions out of reach.
Well, that's always been true.
Yeah,
but in this case, I would say that whatever brain state it is that leads to spirituality is a brain state. And it's some
psychological state.
It's a set of neurons and
people mistake that for God.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're seeing their own mind.
Or they mistake it for, or they want to call it spirituality. If that's what they
want
to call
it.
But it is nothing more than a set of brain states.
Well, there is no consensus that there is nothing more than brain states. But then you're back into the argument.
But
that,
do they describe it as anything more than a personal experience? Their spirituality.
No.
So it's something inside your brain.
That doesn't necessarily follow. But that's
it does if you if you believe in science. So you're saying there's something outside of the brain that people experience?
No.
Okay.
This is a nuance.
Too subtle for me.
But you were there when Phil and I were debating, and what some are saying, and I'm saying some atheists with no belief in anything supernatural, mm-hmm. is that there is the possibility of the physical and the mental, and that the mental is something that is not completely explainable by science. So that something has emerged in the human brain that is different than anything physical. This is where Phil and I agree. That is what powers free will. Because free will is contrary to the laws of physics. So free will cannot be explained by science. But there is something, not something supernatural, something unknown.
I think you're describing a soul.
No, I am not describing a soul.
So, well, I just...
No,
get all
no, that's an important point. A religious person goes to a soul. We are talking about something unknown, something not understood, and something not physical, not supernatural, that has emerged, something unique.
So why can't you call it soul?
Because that has because soul has a meaning to religious people. Yeah. Soul comes from the supernatural. Word soul is problematic
when you say
for an atheist.
Physical, mental, unexplainable. Okay.
The thing is, though, John, if this unknown thing doesn't help explain what you observe, what is its purpose? And this is where we differed on free will.
Yes.
Because I didn't think it was necessary to explain what we observe. But you thought it was necessary to explain a personal experience of perceived choice. My position was the opposite.
The question of free will, as understood by some, becomes a question of, is there something significant? There is nothing more significant in the universe than the human mind. Okay, that will make that assertion. So to understand the human mind as transcending the brain becomes a significant idea. Mm-hmm. Not separate from the brain, not independent of the brain, not a soul like a religious person. So the debate is, does your view or my view most align with what we observe in reality? And I would make the claim, my view is closer to observed reality than your view. That we did not resolve in January, okay. And may never resolve.
Well, I'm not sure of what transcendent state is not explicable.
The thing is, I've got free will. I don't need it explained.
That's fine.
But that's why I'm saying every time that you have to, I believe you have to explain as far as possible the physical phenomena. Okay? But the other, I don't even know what the other phenomena are.
Well, nobody does, but we assert it exists.
No.
So what word would you use other than soul for the intangible feelings?
Well, I don't want to use a word. No, it's not feelings. Well, it's not emotion. We're not talking feelings and emotion. We're talking... I don't want to use a word because it is truly an unknown. We do not know how the brain generates consciousness. So I'm reluctant to use a word for it because it is an unknown. But I would... accept the assertions of those who claim that it is something non-physical, cannot be explained only by physics and physical knowledge and science, and has the capacity to act as an uncaused cause, and that is a phrase that begins to align with religion, but... and there's problems with that, but either you and I can act with an uncaused cause or not. Either that is true or it is not true. So for me, it is extremely significant.
And but what do you, when you're saying, you know, if you look at that star, you get that, what is the word then for that? If it isn't, I mean, I use the word soul, it's the closest thing I know.
I don't have a need for that word.
We don't have a word.
But I don't have. I'm not sure even what you're talking about.
I have a word for it. It's cool.
To me, a soul.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. Leave the body. That's a religious
understanding. That's about as far as it goes.
I'm really not using the right word.
Well, I think the word that I would use that's closest to what you're describing is the self, the observer in the auditorium of consciousness. We get a sense that there's somebody in there watching everything that's happening. It's me.
Me.
Okay.
Right.
I If you want to call that the soul, I'm fine with that. But just as long as we're not talking about something immaterial that drifts out of the body after life.
I guess self. That's good. Okay, that's all I'm trying to do is set up. I'm trying to communicate. When you say there's not a word, there's got to be
something. Well, at the same time, when you see trash on the street and ahi-heek and dog doo-doo, you have a bad feeling about that. But you don't need to explain it.
I think that's a judgment.
No, I'm saying at the other hand, if you're looking at a clear sky with many stars and you find that pleasurable, but I think those are just learned experiences.
I think our response to excrement is probably revulsion, it's probably evolutionarily, tempered. I'll look it up at stars.
There's a reason why if you look at blankness, it leaves you with one kind of feeling. If you look at the stars, that's another kind of feeling. And if you look at dirt, a lot of that is because of how that impacts your health through the ages talking about. How it impacts you in a number of different ways. But at the same time, to me, those are learned responses.
I'm not sure how innate my feeling of awe is when I look up at the stars. My feeling of awe when I look up at the stars. I don't know how innate that is.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I would agree that it's learned. And the more you learn about it, the more spiritual the experience is. Once you understand how far that starlight has come to impact your retina, it adds so much to the experience.
Yes.
But there's nothing supernatural about it there's nothing that can't be explained physically
that's where you and I differ, Henry, which is fine. I am asserting there is something that cannot be explained physically.
I think once they develop AI,
we don't know.
How do you know it exists?
How do we know it exists?
It's a feeling.
No, it's more than a feeling.
It's an awareness.
No. I would assert that free will is evidence that it exists. Okay. That would be one piece of evidence, but I would give another piece of evidence. The ability of anything physical to change itself, we can only find one instance of that, and that is the human brain. The study of meditators, and we're not talking people who have meditated thousands and thousands of hours. There are perceivable differences in brain structure. So the concept that the brain generates a mind which can form an intention, which in turn can act and change itself, is not explainable with laws of science.
You know, why not?
Plasticity.
Brain plasticity is built into
the... Why isn't that explainable?
It has not been explained. There is no explanation for consciousness. There are theories of consciousness. There are a range of theories of consciousness.
But you confuse consciousness, plasticity and consciousness.
Well, no. I'm saying that... that the plasticity is coming from a mental action.
Sure. But mental actions are physical actions too.
Well, that's an assertion, but you have to prove that to me.
Right.
What is the evidence for that assertion?
Any neuroscientist can
go into an fMRI and take a look.
Neuroscientists are divided on the question. There is no consensus amongst neuroscientists.
So they haven't figured it out yet. But that doesn't mean that it can't be figured out.
That's right. It doesn't mean it can't be figured out.
Okay, but isn't that what the spirituality is asserting, that it can't be figured out?
No.
No, I thought that's what you just said. That it will never be known.
No, I've never said that it can't never be known, that it is
it's
not.
It's just not currently known.
It's not currently known, and as time goes on, we are approaching limits of knowledge that make it less likely that it will ever be known.
I where do you get that statement from?
I get that that's from world-class neuroscientists.
Once they develop AI,
exactly.
It's going to go way past what we can do. In fact, we're probably a doomed species, is the truth of it. Probably
possibly.
But trust me, once they develop AI, it'll answer your question.
Well, there's an unanswered question in AI that we might get an answer to in our lifetime, and that is, if we build a sophisticated enough machine, this will resolve the debate between you and me, will that machine develop free will? That is an open question.
If you can think, really what you're talking about is thinking. If you can think, you have free will. It's not given or taken. If you can think, you have free will.
Okay.
I don't have to have any mysticism around it.
Will that machine have free will?
Do you get the significance of the unanswered question about
how do you measure free will?
Intelligence?
No, I haven't really understood a word you've said. I mean, only because I totally disagree with what you're saying, so I... maybe not listening as intently as I should.
Well, I want to say that this has been an extremely interesting conversation, and I hope that I will be here on the third Wednesday of June.
Do you have a topic to present?
Remiss. No, I do not.
Are we talking about dinner or something?
But Lucretia and I did come before, and it's all her fault because she sort of had some personal problems, but we hope that we hope that we're back on track.
June is your July meeting.
That's why I wasn't.
There might not be June and July meetings.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We're free.
So yeah, I was going to say,
watch for your emails. Okay. He's not saying that there won't be. He's saying that there might not be.
You're not going to be here. You're saying maybe June and July?
Yeah, June and July.
I'm pretty sure.
If he won't be in the area,
June, I'm not sure.
If he has free will, there will be.
Yeah.